The COVID-19 pandemic taught to many and, well, made others ignorant, to be kind. When it comes to health, the latter, by the way, is not the place to be. This time in America saw a realization of the importance of vaccines, yet interrupted what had been a regular schedule of vaccinations for children. And just as the path back to normal seemed here, right along came the numerous COVID variants. Add to that a growing pushback against any vaccine by more and more parents for their kids. With us now to examine this issue on behalf of the American College of Preventive Medicine is the apostle of public health, as she refers to herself, Dr. Chris Purnell. How are you, doctor?
I'm good, Chris. Great to be on with you today.
Well, great to talk about this important issue, too. Give you a couple of websites, and of course, they are on our homepage as well. Learn more about the American College of Preventive Medicine, acpm.org. And if you're assuming the obvious for Dr. Purnell, you are right, drchrispurnell.com. Let's start with, as I said in the introduction, it seemed like we were out of the woods and back to normal, but then the variants come one after another.
Yeah.
The current one being called, and I question the choice of names, but it becomes a point of mocking almost for some. But the Kraken variant is here, and this thing is spreading literally like crazy, from around 2% of the cases back in December to, well, more than half of the cases now.
Yes. So, Chris, the way that I think it's best for everyone to think about it is the pandemic is in flux. It goes through various stages. And the way that the coronavirus tries to gain an advantage, if you will, over human beings is to mutate, right? It's to change. And what is that change? It is a mistake in the genetic code of the virus. And that mistake in the genetic code gives it some type of competitive advantage, whether it's more easily spread, as we see the case with a current variant, or whether it causes more severe or toxic disease. We don't have the data to support that with the current variants that are circulating, but it may have some immune evasion, meaning that our known vaccines it may not be as effective as they were against previous variants, but still holding up in preventing severe disease or hospitalization. So we know what the coronavirus will do, meaning it will continue to change. We don't know which changes it will produce, but it will continue to change. So we have to be armed, if you will, with the best information, and we have that data available, and we have to go into our prevention toolkit, right? This is how I explain it to people. Go into your prevention toolkit and pull out the tools that will keep you and your family safe. I know we get tired. I know it seems like we're saying the same thing over and over. That's because we can't let our vigilance or our guard down as we look to live a full, healthy, happy life.
And when you think about it, too, the tools in the toolkit, to go along with your analogy, are really simple, easy, basic, everyone can access tools.
Yes. So in public health, we always look to have multi-layered mitigation strategies. And people may say, well, what does that mean? We look to have various tools of different shapes and different sizes. And you know, just like when you're in your home or your apartment or working with your car, there is a specific tool for the specific job. And we have masks to prevent the spread of the virus. We have physical distancing also to decrease the transmission of the virus. We do things that promote hygiene and promote cleanliness. So we're washing our hands, we're wiping down surfaces, and one of the most important tools that we have is the vaccine. It is actually probably our most powerful tool at preventing severe death and or disease and hospitalization. What we know with the vaccines that we have, while variants have proliferated, these vaccines have held up against preventing severe disease. If you look at the analysis that the Commonwealth Fund recently did, and this organization is a bedrock public health board organization, and they did some analysis. Since the coronavirus vaccines have been made available, we have saved more than 3 million lives, meaning we prevented 3 million additional deaths. Since the coronavirus vaccines have been made available, we have prevented 18 million additional hospitalizations. So I think that's how we can best explain to people just how powerful the vaccines and the boosters are in preventing death, disease, and sickness.
Talking with the Apostle of Public Health, Dr. Chris Purnell, on representing the American College of Preventive Medicine about vaccines and the current state of the COVID virus in America. ACPM.org for the American College of Preventive Medicine. DrChrisPurnell.com for Dr. Purnell's information and education. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. I want to focus on vaccines at two levels, Doctor. First, from what I've read, if you've had the Pfizer and the Moderna, you're lot better protected than if you had the one-shot J&J. So that, having said that, with the variants mutating at such a rapid pace, I mean, you would know better than me, is this something historic that we're seeing as far as viruses are concerned? And is it possible for the vaccine production and creation to keep up with this rapid rate of transmission and mutation?
Right. Very, very, very good question, Chris. So let's break this down in various steps. So one, all viruses mutate, right? So certain viruses mutate more than others because, again, that's how the virus tries to gain a competitive advantage so that it can infect a host more easily or infect a person more easily because the virus can't survive outside of that host. And with infecting that person, you may have an asymptomatic infection, or you might develop symptoms. You might show evidence of illness or disease, and it might get to be moderate or severe, and you need to be hospitalized. So that's the first point that I want to break down. With the evolution of the vaccines, and I say the evolution because originally the vaccines that we had available were against the original or wild-type strain of coronavirus. This coronavirus has mutated. We've seen Delta. We've seen Omicron. And this really is, as some people have said, a cousin of Omicron, these sub-variants that we're currently dealing with. We do know that the vaccines are good at preventing severe disease and hospitalization, especially because of those numbers I just shared, right? Preventing an additional 3 million deaths and preventing an additional 18 million hospitalizations. Where the current variants gain an advantage is, can they infect you or can they cause any type of illness or symptoms? And that's where we see those originally what we were calling breakthrough cases, right? That's where we see a person gets exposed who's been vaccinated and boosted and may still test positive for coronavirus, but they're not as likely to get very sick or to get sick enough to need to be hospitalized. And so I think that's very important for people to understand. Do we need to continue to expand and grow the science around the vaccines? Most certainly. We need to think about creating vaccines that will prevent infection altogether. Do we need to focus on mass production? Most certainly, because that's what was unique in this pandemic. We had public and private partnerships, meaning the federal government coming together with pharmaceutical companies to ensure we could mass produce the vaccine in the numbers and the time that was necessary to beat back this pandemic. Now that we know that the federal government is considering moving us out of the public health emergency phase, we want to ensure that those who are most marginalized in society, right, those historically excluded and stigmatized groups, whether they are Black or African American, Hispanic or Latino, Asian, Native and Indigenous populations, those who live in rural areas, or those who are at the lower end of the socioeconomic status, ensure that they still have access, can afford getting the vaccine. So that's what's really important and what we should be thinking about as we navigate how this pandemic ebbs and flows.
I hope what you say is resonating with anyone listening who prefers getting their information from social media posts as opposed to experts such as yourself and so many more who are readily accessible through our gift of modern technology. Plus the fact, too, Doctor, there's still a mystery of what's to come out there regarding all the strains of the COVID virus. The term is long COVID, and we're just beginning to understand a bare concept of what that's going to hold.
Yes. So, unfortunately, I've been personally impacted by this pandemic, like so many other Americans and people across the globe. I lost my dad, Chris, on April 13th, 2020, to coronavirus at the height of the pandemic. And then my sister, who's a breast cancer survivor, she developed coronavirus and became a long COVID survivor. It took her almost a year to return to her baseline. And still to this day, she has residual impacts and effects of being infected by coronavirus. I got coronavirus back in June of 2022, and I could tell you it took me all the way to the fall and the winter to feel like myself. So we do know there is a considerable amount of disability, or another term I'll use that we use in healthcare, morbidity associated with being infected. There is still so much we don't know, but we are learning that the body, how it responds to or how it is impacted by having been infected by coronavirus, can range from cardiovascular symptoms, meaning chest pain or fast heart rate, to respiratory symptoms, meaning nagging cough. You could even get increased reflux, like I did, because it increases inflammation in the body. And we see this debilitating fatigue, and very similar to another condition, which I also suffer from, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which I had before coronavirus. But we're seeing that debilitating chronic fatigue where the body just feels like it's been through the ringer. So because of the level of disability that the coronavirus can cause, we want to prevent all infections. And the best way to prevent all infections is how? Go into that toolkit to ensure that we get vaccinated. Look, about 80% of the American public has had at least one dose. About 70% have completed the primary series. But then when you think about that bivalent booster, we're only talking about 16% have completed the bivalent booster, Chris. And then if you break it down for children, and we don't want our children exposed to the risk of long COVID, if you look at that 5 years and older group, only about 28% of those completed the primary series of COVID-19 vaccinations, so not even getting to the boosting. And then if we look at the 12 to 17-year-olds, again, only about 28%. And then finally, only about 50% or 51% of children 5 and older have had the first booster. So to continue to have this conversation is so very important, because we don't want anyone getting infected and anyone having the risk of developing long COVID.
And part of that conversation is information, and that's the empowerment that the American College of Preventive Medicine provides. You can find out more at acpm.org and to learn more about Dr. Chris Parnell, drchrispurnell.com, the apostle of public health. Indeed, she is. Dr. Parnell, thank you so much for the awareness that you raise and the attention that you draw to something very important. As you mentioned, very simple steps to put up the, in light of the Super Bowl weekend, prevent defense. So thank you for doing that, for being here today.
Yes, Chris, thanks for having me. And I'll give you one more website, vaccineconfident.org. Parents can go on there, individuals can go on there to learn about the importance of all vaccines, not just COVID, because we know by the end of 2021, over 25 million doses were missed in immunization. So I just want people to be as safe as possible. So reach into your toolkit and do what's in the best interest of you, your family, and your community.